Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And joining us now are the authors of a brand new book called The Da Vinci Legacy, Jean-Pierre Espouts and Christopher Heath Brown. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
It's our pleasure.
You know, I'm always interested in books in general. I love art when it comes to the artwork on this book. And I got to say, this may be one of the heaviest books I felt based on the size of the book. I don't know why it's so heavy. What did you guys do to weight it down?
Well, our publisher, Apollo, graciously agreed to print all of the illustrations in color. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you have to use very heavy stock paper, glossy heavy stock paper. And that's why the book looks so gorgeous and why it's so heavy, perhaps.
Oh, it is. The prints are beautiful in this, and there are so many different artworks in here. How do you even clear the rights to be able to put all the photos in this?
Well, it took a long time for Chris and I to go through, of course, all the material that we wanted to cover. You know, we wanted to really investigate how Leonardo, who died as a reclusive artist, all but forgotten in his home country of Italy, he died in France, how he became the great pop icon he is today. Because when he died in 1519, he was vastly overshadowed by his rivals, Raphael and Michelangelo, and basically people had forgotten about him. So how did he become so famous today? And that's what we tried to do. And in order to illustrate that story, we had to really draw from a vast array of illustrations, including copper engravings, which we found played a major role in the fostering of his fame.
Yeah. And the iconic side, which is interesting, that at the time, you can go and say, okay, forgettable, but all of a sudden, the resurrection, and you see it again. And I read, is he the highest-selling artist of all time?
Chris? That would be correct. He sold the Salvador Mundi, basically, for $450 million just last summer.
Wow.
And there's never been a sale at Sotheby's or Christie's that sold for that much ever in the art world.
Would you say he's maybe the most popular artist of all time, too, now?
Unquestionably.
I think he is, go ahead, Chris.
I think Leonardo da Vinci is probably the most famous, just not for his artwork, but because of all the things that he did with science and engineering and technology, and he was absolutely brilliant, way ahead of his time, and as a result of copper engraving and Napoleon and stolen Mona Lisa, and then contemporary artists using his work, such as Salvador Dali and Andy Warhol. Even our children, know him, Leonardo da Vinci, and being part of the Turtles and Leonardo's Ninja Turtles. So again, we go from a period of time of Christ all the way to 1500 years, and all of a sudden the first name that pops up in everybody's mind is Leonardo da Vinci. And then we have Galileo and a number of other people since da Vinci, of course, but he's the one person that, if you were to talk to anybody in the world about, he is a name that would be one of the first names that comes up is somebody with popularity or being famous or people know his work.
Yeah, in the book, The Da Vinci Legacy, and it's right on top, as seen on public television, and this is almost perfect for people that appreciate art. And I also read that pretty much anyone that has their hands in Leonardo da Vinci when they do a special on television, it gets high ratings. So I know that this has to be really popular for you guys. How long were you working on this book for?
Oh, it had been back to at least 2 years. Of course, Chris and I have been working on Leonardo together for, 6 years now. Our first book looked at the Mona Lisa and posited that there are actually two Mona Lisas, an earlier version and a version which is now in the Louvre. And then we tackled the young years of Leonardo. There's a lot of mystery about that, a lot of legends and misunderstandings. Why did Leonardo, for example, leave his native town of Florence and go to Milan, which is very different city where he hardly knew anyone. So we uncovered that, and in the process, we even discovered that in addition to the Last Supper fresco, which he painted in Milan, he made a second version of that painting, which he was commissioned by the King of France, Louis the XII. And this painting we actually tracked back to a remote convent in Belgium. So there's lots of wonderful mysteries that we try to uncover, not only in the young Leonardo, but also in the current book, The Da Vinci Legacy.
Yeah. So The Da Vinci Legacy, Jean-Pierre Isbouts and Christopher Heath Brown joining us on KMOX. What's fascinating, too, is when you go back and you say, okay, he's a recluse. He was basically someone that wasn't appreciated. Not a nobody, because he was very talented, but they didn't really track him like a celebrity for his time. How do you even find information some 500 years ago about someone that no one cared about?
Well, what we did is we Chris and I sat together and we organized our thriller-like quest, you know, our research, and we said we're going to look at four different areas: the literature of the period, where we found some very, very intriguing sources. We also looked at things that you don't typically see in an art book. For example, the social movements of the era, the development of copper engraving as the first mass medium that basically distributed the fame of the Last Supper throughout Europe. And we looked at political movements, the fact that time and again you see that autocratic rulers use Leonardo to boost their regimes. Louis XVIII, and of course the most recent example, is the ruler of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, who purchased the Salvador Mundi, as Chris said, for $450 million, in an attempt, of course, to boost the credibility of his regime. The funny thing is, of course, that Christianity is not allowed in Saudi Arabia. So it's sort of ironic that you have the de facto ruler of that country or that kingdom paying $500 million for a portrait of Jesus Christ. So there are wonderful stories like that throughout the book.
To celebrate the 500th anniversary of Leonardo da Vinci's passing, at the time, nothing spectacular about him, but through time became one of the most popular artists of all time, is Dr. Christopher Brown and Jean-Pierre Isbouts. We'll continue our conversation with them. They have a book out now, which you can check out about Leonardo da Vinci. It's called The Da Vinci Legacy, next on KMOX. It's hard to believe that Leonardo da Vinci was not celebrated during his time. It wasn't until well after, and now he's one of the most iconic artists of all time. To talk about that with their new book, The Da Vinci Legacy, is Dr. Christopher Brown and also Jean-Pierre Isbouts. They have a special on PBS that's running, narrated by Morgan Freeman, which is pretty cool, too. You know what I read about The Last Supper? And I don't know if this is true or not, but I'll ask you guys. Was there a time where they were even thinking about painting over that? They were renovating or doing something to the hall it's in, and they didn't know if they were going to keep it?
Well, no, there never was an attempt to paint over the fresco in Milan. But there was, unfortunately, and this in fact happened, Leonardo had also created a fresco in the city hall in Florence. This is the Palazzo della Signoria. Your listeners will know it as the Palazzo Vecchio, in the heart of Florence, if you visit that city today. And Leonardo painted the Battle of Anghiari, which is a seminal moment in one of the most famous battles in Florence's history. And it was a gorgeous piece, but once again he used the wrong pigments and the whole thing began to drip. And he left Florence, never finished it. And even though it was in its unfinished state, you have artists from all over the world coming to Florence to see this incredible painting, until in the mid-16th century it was indeed overpainted, and a very mediocre work by Vasari came in its place. So great loss to mankind.
Well, pretty much
and
anything.
What you may have been referring to with The Last Supper is, after World War II, someone cut a doorway in underneath The Last Supper, which actually cut the legs of Jesus Christ out, because there was a kitchen on the backside of The Last Supper, and they were trying to get easier access to feed the monks at the Santa Maria Grazia, and they cut a doorway in, and whoever had the job of cutting this doorway in actually cut away part of The Last Supper. And Pina Brambilia, of course, you know, has been restoring The Last Supper until somewhere around 1997, I believe. And only 20% of what Leonardo actually painted on the Last Supper wall is what Leonardo painted. That's all that's left of his original beautiful painting.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
The Da Vinci Legacy is the name of the book, how an elusive 16th century artist became a global pop icon. If people want to check out the book, where can they find it?
Well, we have a special website set up. It's very simple. It's called Leonardo Books, plural, leonardobooks.com. You'll find lots of material about Leonardo, as well as a link to the trailer of the film that was produced about the book, which is now airing on PBS stations throughout the country.
That's awesome.
And by the way, that's also narrated by Morgan Freeman, and it was our second movie that was narrated on PBS, the first being Search for the Last Supper, and then this, of course, Search for the Mona Lisa.
Wow, that is awesome. Morgan Freeman gets involved. That must have been a special phone call when you found that one out. Oh, just no big deal. But Morgan Freeman's going to voice this for public television. You know, was
not only was that special, but spending an entire day with him and doing the voiceover and being able to spend the time with the voice of God was truly an amazing day.
Wow! It probably brings things alive with a voice like that that can come in and put that. Is there anything that surprised you in your research? Something that you weren't expecting to find?
Well, for me, the most surprising thing was his humanity. Leonardo, you know, we often think of him as some sort of a secular person who, was very remote from people and looked at the phenomena of nature on its own accord. But what we found as we went through his notebooks is the man was not only extremely gifted, but was also very lonely. You know, he was taken away from his mother when he was 5 years old, and we believe that the Mona Lisa, in many ways, is an attempt to restore the ideal image of motherhood that he's been yearning for his entire life.
And I guess for me, the surprise would have been, for the last 3 years, Leonardo lived with the French king. And I think he was at a point in his life where he was ready to start organizing his thoughts and all his notebooks. And we always delayed doing this organizational thing. And unfortunately, he had a stroke 3 years prior to his death. And I think as a result of that, he never got to the phase where he could have organized his works into a manner where the whole world would have benefited from his knowledge and his observation in the 1500s.
I think it's interesting. They look at Da Vinci, and I'm sure there's a lot of other art collectors out there that say, well, you know, maybe I'll be the next person to find that one hidden artist that will be worth the multi-millions. But that's a pretty rare thing to find anything like that. Are you holding out hope there'll be some other long-lost painting somewhere out there that'll be found?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, in fact, Chris and I have identified the hand of Leonardo in this second version of The Last Supper, which we believe was painted by his workshop. And we just finished a multispectral study, which is the technology that allows you to see underneath the paint layer. And we have established that one of the figures, the figure of John, was definitely painted by Leonardo. So that's a wonderful discovery. You know, typically, discoveries of new Leonardos are made by European art historians. So Chris and I were very proud that we were able to discover that.
Yeah.
And fortunately, over the last 10 years, there's been a number of discoveries and a number of things that have come out of Swiss bank vaults. And we only have about 30% of his notebooks. There's suspected to be another 70% of his notebooks that have either been broken up or that are hidden or that are in a Swiss bank vault. And at some point, we may, in fact, see more of Da Vinci's mind and what he discovered back in the 1500s.
You know,
that's right.
When you're scanning, 500 years or so since his passing, it's amazing that you can find anything after something like that, which is pretty remarkable how sometimes these private collections hold on to it and you have no idea where it's at. And who knows, it might be just stored somewhere in someone's attic, and far as they know, their great whatever held on to it. And it's just sitting somewhere in a box, you know, just waiting to be discovered. Okay, so one more time, if people wanted to check out the book, The Da Vinci Legacy, how an elusive 16th century artist became a global pop icon, you guys set up a special website. What is that?
It's called leonardobooks.com.
Perfect. And I would hope that when someone gets a hold of this and they see all the beautiful color photos, they will also have the first impression, wow, this is a heavy book. Like, you guys put a lot into this one, and it just feels good. And it's, I like the artwork, beautiful artwork on it. So I wanted to thank you guys for spending some time here on KMOX. Jean-Pierre Esbautz and Christopher Heath Brown, thank you for coming on to Overnight America.
Thank you, Ryan. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I always like that sort of thing. We post them up online at KMOX.com/ONA, trying to class this place up a little bit, add a little sophistication to the late night overnight hours. It is our first show of the week. We go through the entire week, and it's weird now that the Blues are done. Every day I would come into the show thinking, okay, is it a Blues night? All right, am I going to be depressed, happy, sad, excited? What's my emotion going to be later tonight? I don't know. It depends on how the Blues are doing. Well, it's over. They did it. They've reached the summit, and now they are celebrating, and they're in Las Vegas for the award ceremony. I don't exactly know when that is held. The strange thing is, I'm kind of disappointed. I love the ride and the thrill of the Blues doing their thing for so long, and it was just awesome to me. But, hey, here we go. Now we're going to have to find something else. With the Cardinals, I'd love to see them make a turnaround. I'd love to see them start playing well again because they started off so well and so good. Just not so much lately. Did you see the parade this weekend? I think that with the parade, there were so many people there. They're still trying to figure out what is the total amount of people. And I was going online, and they were trying to estimate this. So KMOV did a story. When it comes to the St. Louis Stanley Cup parade, massive success for the team, hundreds of thousands of fans showing up, but how many exactly? Based on public safety sourcing, observations from News 4 reporters and aerial videos, an estimated 300,000 people attended the parade and rally. And that's the thing. Some people said it was a lot higher. Some people said, oh, no, it's closer to 500,000. Some people even said over 1 million to 1.5 million. Wow. The official estimate will come out with a specific number, but St. Louis will have to go through some rough estimates to figure it out. And we don't know exactly how many it was, but if you were there, it probably felt like 1 million people, you with about 1 million people. Now, if you missed the speech from Brett Hall, I may have to play that for you next. What a crazy time. We broadcasted it here on KMOX. You're able to listen to it here live. It went long, but man, it didn't seem like anyone noticed. It's Overnight America, KMOX. If you missed the parade this weekend, I'll tell you that the KMOX broadcast crew working overtime on Saturday. And it all paid off when Brett Hall hit the stage.
Glory, Gloria! 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 I think I got your number! Gloria!
It was Brett Hall. Oh, man, one of the all-time great players in the NHL. So, of course, we had to make up our own remix of it. I'm going to say producer Cole, who was here earlier, did a much better job than I did. I'll play both of our versions so you kind of get a feel for it. I'll play mine first because I'm telling you right now, Cole's is better. And it's got to start with a little Gloria.
Gloria, 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 I think I got your number, Gloria. Glory, Gloria.
All right, so that's about enough of that. All right, producer Cole's was so much better, though.
If everybody wants you,
Gloria,
why isn't anybody calling?
Gloria,
you don't have to answer. Leave them hanging on the line. Oh,
Glory, Gloria.
I got your number, Gloria.
Brett Hall, man. Oh, that's just funny. I've seen some people post some things online. One person said, what's stronger, Brett Hall's love for the Blues or his liver? So his whole speech on stage was like that. This is what it looked like from a consumer just watching it, because I wasn't at the parade, but I was watching some of the clips after the fact. And even here on KMOX, they mentioned something like this, but, you know, Fox Sports Midwest said something too. They saw Brett Hall hit the stage, and he's wearing a Ric Flair drop or something like that. And the picture on his shirt is the picture of him when he was caught with his finger up to the Bruins. So they show that, and they said, oh boy, you know, he's an executive. He shouldn't be out there doing that. So he's sitting, like, front row. And Brett Hall being Brett Hall, if you remember, the pregame ceremony, he goes out there and does a Let's Go Blues and goes absolutely crazy, and pretty much someone has to help him stand up. So he gets there, and this is like, it doesn't get any better if you're Brett Hall. You know, it's the team you love, it's the city you love, it's the organization you love. He goes out there and does what Brett Hall does. Well, here's the speech. And at first they said, he doesn't have a microphone, that's probably good. You know, he's going to come out, hop on stage, and oh, there he goes. He found a microphone. And this is what transpired.
You can say Let's Go Blues all you want, but you know what? We went Blues! We don't have to go anymore because we already did it!
Oh, holy.
These guys won the Stanley Cup for this city! There is nothing more they have to do. So instead of saying, Let's Go Blues, we're going to say, We went Blues.
He's gonna
we
be.
Went Blues. We went Blues.
He's going to be hoarse the rest of his life.
I am looking out at all the blue and gold, and I love you so much.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
This is only going to be one of many Stanley Cups that we win here. Because we bleed blue. I love you. I love you so much. I've seen you at so many places. Oh, we've had a good time. But these guys, they spent 2 months and they won it for us. And they are the champions. Glory, Gloria, Gloria, Gloria. I think I got your number, Gloria.
That was all 2 minutes of Brett Hall on the main stage. Just keep thinking. Sir, he could have said anything, and he was saying anything. Anything that came to mind, it was coming out of his mouth. And, you know, he kind of had that feeling where he was kind of like, you know, only half of his mouth was opening up, where he must have been really trying to be good. And I got to tell you, if you're Brett Hall and you've waited your whole life for a moment like this from a team you love in a city you love, yeah, he went a little overboard, sure. But look at him. That's raw emotion. And I have no doubt in his mind when he said, I love all of you. And you can hear the KMOX crew on the broadcast side. You can hear them chuckling as they as they cover this, saying, oh man. Now, I don't know Brett Hall how he's doing today. And we just make sure he's doing all right. Hopefully he is. One person, and was it the Maryland Heights police? I think this is official Maryland Heights police. Let me pull this up real quick. But they tweeted, they put on something on Facebook. that said, if you partied like Brett Hall today, don't get behind the wheel. Find someone that partied like Vladimir Tarasenko to take you home. A PSA from the Maryland Heights Police Department. Please let that be true. It's crazy to see all these people. And when they look at these estimates, it really does surprise me. 300,000 does seem low. I would guess there was at least a 500,000 people out there. So let's see what it takes to update those numbers and when that comes out. Yeah, Brett Hall was going crazy, man. Absolute crazy. I got to give major credit for producer Cole. He just put out that glorious song. He did a great job. You know what's nice, too? I mean, there's a lot of side effects of what happened. You know what is frustrating is going online and you see every ad is buy Blues memorabilia. There was one that was from Barstool Sports. They're the outfit in Boston that dogged St. Louis this whole time. They hassled them about everything. They hate St. Louis. They're homeboys for Boston. And what about when it comes to selling merchandise? Boy, they were right on the forefront trying to hawk us merchandise with their little Barstool St. Louis Blues championship stuff. It was just, again, no integrity from that Barstool organization on something like that, as if people here in St. Louis weren't going to notice. I also noticed that people must have submitted these ads, of course, before the Stanley Cup, or at least created the artwork before it, and they had one of each, one from Boston, one from St. Louis, and then whoever won, they probably submitted that ad as fast as possible to try to get that out there. Unfortunately, when they created those artworks for the ads, they didn't know who the Conn Smythe Trophy winner was going to be. So a lot of these ads I see circulating around, it's a bobblehead of a generic St. Louis Blues player holding the Conn Smythe Trophy, and where the head of Ryan O'Reilly should be, it's just a big black spot. Like they just were going to insert it and forgot to add it later. Real sloppy ads. They know that everyone wants to go out there and buy this memorabilia as fast as possible. So they're not going to hold back. They're going to get it out there. People don't notice these things. They just buy a shirt. They're going to hold the money up and say, you know, give me that shirt. Shut up and take my money. Do it right now. One segment left on Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. We're in one last segment here. Man, could you imagine this? When we have power outages in the United States, it's such a hassle. You could be out of power for an hour and you would complain, like, oh, how long is this going to take? If you're out of power for a day, you're starting to think about the food in your house and what's in the fridge. If you're out for a week, you're finding other places to live because that's a long time to be without hot water. Or in some places, water in general. Massive blackouts are hitting tens of millions of people in South America. Tens of millions! Tens of millions! In Argentina, massive blackout left tens of millions of people without electricity. In Argentina, Paraguay, Sunday, in the president said it's an unprecedented failure in the country's power grid. 98% of Argentina by this evening had their electricity returned, but you're still looking at some other places, tens of millions. If you have a 1,000 people without power, that's a big deal anymore. 10,000 is a huge deal. There's only a couple of times I can remember massive power outages. I remember that one time pretty much all of the Northeast went out. If you remember that, they showed satellite photos from space where it was just a blackout in the United States. It was just one of those weird, strange things. But, you know, the thing that should not be underestimated is what happens here in the United States if there's a massive blackout. Because we are just one solar flare away from taking out the entire grid. Look what happened in Puerto Rico when you have a hurricane that hits and the infrastructure is totally out of tune with where it should be. You know, we're paying all these companies to keep up and maintain these things and none of the work was getting done. Complete mess. You ever see the photos after the hurricane there? They show photos of some of the areas where they tried to get it back up and running. There were just power lines everywhere. No rhyme or reason to it. Everything was just kind of spackled together. So it was no surprise that if a major storm comes through there, it would knock a bunch of these power lines down and take people off the grid. Well, it took them a long, long, long time to get back up and running. An awful long time. And it's sad. but it's also a reality here in the United States. Now, we don't need a hurricane. We have some pretty good defenses for this sort of thing. We got a lot of workers. But if we have something that we can't defend against, like Puerto Rico to a hurricane, if we can't defend against the solar flare, some of these estimates that these professionals put out there, you know, we could be out of power for years before they can rebuild it. Think about how long it takes to rebuild an entire infrastructure. And we're talking about the entire country. You know, if that's all you worked on was trying to get power back, it would take years, upwards to a decade, to get everyone back into power. That's scary to me. And the thing is, there's nothing you can do as of right now to defend yourself against that. These solar flares happen, but one powerful enough, we're due. They say it happens every 120 years, 100 years, something like that. And we're well overdue for one. The last time one of these major ones hit, it was in the late 1800s, but there really wasn't an electric power structure around to influence it all. So lucky for us, you know, it hit when it wasn't going to be a catastrophe, but once it happens again, it happens. And it has nothing to do with, you know, global warming. It has nothing to do with anything man-made. It's just something that happens with the sun. And you can see photos of some of the flare-ups they've had, but you get a big burst here. Man, we're toast. It just hits us. That's kind of scary. So massive blackouts hitting tens of millions in South America right now, if they didn't already have enough to deal with down there. Think about Venezuela, for example. Here's something from USA Today. This was more fun than anything else. Anyone over the age of like 30 could probably relate to this. I'm not saying everyone over the age of 30 can relate to this, but most people over the age of 30. These are the 20 everyday tasks that nobody does anymore. And I'm someone that is old enough to remember doing a lot of these things. Like, for example, memorize a phone number. How many of you actually have 10 phone numbers memorized? And we're not going to count a few things. We're not going to count your parents' number. We're not going to count your old home number, and we're not going to count your phone number and your wife's phone number, okay? Or whatever, your husband's phone number. So if you take all of those out of the equation, your kids and your wife or your husband and your parents, how many other phone numbers do you have memorized right now? You probably have KMOX, as we say it a million times. Like, you'd probably be able to say 436-7900. Okay, that's one. All right, how many other phone numbers do you have memorized? It's just not an easy thing. It's something we don't do anymore. We have a smartphone. We have it saved in our phone, and that's it. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to think about it. It's right there. And if you don't know what something is, you have the ability to look it up within moments, and it doesn't take that long to do. Now, here's another thing that nobody does anymore. Use a phone book to find a company to do work around your house. Man, these companies used to have to spend major bucks in the yellow pages to get a nice little ad in there, because that's how they got most of their business. Not anymore. They get a lot more referrals online with some of these other, handyman services that are out there. Sell your car with a cardboard sign stuck to the windshield. You can still do that. When I'm looking for a car, I'm gonna look for cars that just happen to be in neighborhoods with a sign out front. I feel like that's my unfair advantage to live close to someone selling a car as opposed to those that are looking online and trying to find the perfect car. Figure out math in your head. Now, that's something that's gone away. I find that's very difficult for me to do anymore. Before, I used to be okay at it, but now you're so reliant on computers to do all of this for you. Even kids going to school, it's like the calculators are there all the time. They just know that the calculators are going to be used, so you might as well just let them do it. Call and ask a family member, where are you? I guess with trackers and things, but that's still relevant. I guess you're still going to text at least. Tell time by hands on a clock. My son could tell time by hands on a clock, because all of the clocks we have in our house, because of it being decoration, are, you know, not digital. They're manual, I guess you would say, analog. So you have the hands, and he's got a pretty good idea of it. He's not fully committed to it, but he's four, so he can read a digital pretty easy. But this is kind of cool, actually. I think it's great. Make photo albums. Oh yeah, if you remember those days, we used to get the disposable cameras. You know, click, 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 and you take it in, and you would drop it off, and a couple days later, you'd go back 2 days or whatever it was, and then you would pick up your photos. And, you know, the person that was handing you the photos, you knew saw everything that you took a photo of, so you're hoping there was nothing embarrassing in there. And then you would put them in photo albums. Who has photo albums still? Non-digital ones, ones where there's actual photos inside. Now, you used to go and you buy a photo album, but now everything's digital. You just hop online, fill out a template with your digital photos. They print it for you and send it back. Pretty easy. Making mixtapes. Oh, man, those were great. I loved making mixtapes. Sometimes you were making mixtapes off of things you recorded on the radio. Sometimes it was on your own albums or CDs that you're able to do something like that. Or even have a CD or album collection. Now, here's one that I don't think the next generation will ever understand. Call a theater to get movie times. You used to have to call a phone number to figure out when the movie started. And the movie actually started at the time they said it was going to start. And then they had a service where you'd call up. And, you know, all the movie theaters were like this. None of them actually had a person answering the phones. They would, you would listen to it and they'd say, now showing. And then they would say, movie number one at 8:52 and 10:48. And, you know, they do all these things, and then they would go to the next one and the next one and the next one. If you missed it or didn't remember or didn't know what movie you wanted to see, and then you went, you had to call back. You had to hang up and call back to hear their automation again. Watch shows when they are broadcast live. Outside of sports, people don't do that much anymore. Cut things out of the newspaper. Outside of the St. Louis Blues winning and you maybe wanting to save a couple of the articles, how many of you actually clip things out of the newspaper? You don't see that much anymore either. Send a handwritten letter. Look up spelling in the dictionary. When you have Google or Microsoft Word and you can just get that little squiggly red line underneath it, who needs a dictionary? Use a phone booth to make a call. If you could find a phone booth, I'd be impressed. They just do not have them available anymore. Carry cash. I know. No one carries cash. Everything's done with your credit card anymore. Use a travel agent. You know, you can still go. The travel agent thing is, people might not use them anymore, but the travel agents are very helpful. So keep that in mind next time if you're trying to schedule a vacation, instead of going out and trying to do everything independently, like you know what you're doing. Get your old checks back from the bank every month. I don't think that ever happened to me once. Wow. There's a lot of things that are just not done anymore. Some of them for the best. All right, that about does it here for Overnight America. Had some fun with you. We'll be back again tomorrow night, and we'll be on right after Cardinals baseball. Don't go anywhere after the game because I enjoy spending this time with you. All right, have a great night. We'll see you later. Bye.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.